Without question, one of the best in the business. My highest respect to the great Merrill Reese. Sir, welcome back. It is great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. I am still getting over that Penn State win. I watched every single second of it. I had a 4:30 tea time, and I was 15 minutes late.
It was one of those games. Have you had these games where, when it's over, you felt like you played?
I've had a few of those. They just drain you, absolutely. Didn't have any of them last year. I didn't have any of them. But the one in 2018, that was like that. At the end of that Super Bowl, I didn't need a celebration party. I needed a hot shower and a warm bed.
That's what he said. What did you do on the way home on the plane? I said I slept.
Right. That's true.
Oh my goodness, Merrill.
You know what the funny thing about that is? And you tell me if it's the same for you guys coming back. People always say to me after a great win, "Boy, that plane ride home must have been fun," or after a loss, "Boy, that had to be a long play ride home." And I say, you know something? This is my experience. There's no difference. If the Eagles win, it could be a dramatic game, whatever. In the locker room, they celebrate. But by the time they get to the plane, they get on and they are physically and emotionally drained. And it's difficult to see the difference between a loss and a win on the flight itself. Now, the next day they wake up and they're thrilled, and so are we, after a big win, and somewhat depressed and subdued after a loss. But on the plane, it's just everything is just drained out of you, and you just sit back and you can't move.
The exact same experience. And when people say that to you and you say, no, it was pretty quiet, they act like they're in shock, but you have lived it. And what happens is they want two things when they're on the plane: food, right? And rest. And rest. Right. They want to be off their feet. And they're tired.
So that's true. In the old days, they wanted two things when they got on the plane: food and beer. But that doesn't happen anymore.
You know, it's interesting because Jack Ham mentioned that to me when we were getting on the plane. In the old days, he said, they'd have beer waiting for us. I said, welcome to the new age.
Well, when we went up the steps to the plane, each person was given a container with two beers in it. And then I think it was Mike Ditka or somebody, some coach, who got picked up for drunken driving on the way home, and the NFL cut it out.
It was Ditka, exactly.
It was. Amazing.
When a training camp starts, you probably get asked the same question. I'll be asked, what do you think is a successful training camp? And, you know, you got to put in the usual stuff and so forth. I said, do they come out of it with the same personnel that they started with or as close to it as possible? That, to me, dictates whether it's a successful camp or not. In other words, do you have most of your people? I don't know if you have the same standard, but did the Eagles come out of this camp essentially with the same people they started with?
Yeah, they did, but for a different reason. They didn't hit. There was no tackling. They played Jalen Hurts at 10 snaps in one preseason game and hasn't played for over a month. I mean, I know they have the combined drills with the Patriots and the Jets, but again, no tackling. And the regulars, the starters, saw so little preseason game action that everybody is healthy. Now, the question is, are they sharp? Are they ready? If they are, then my antiquated traditional thinking goes out the window. Because I went into this summer, Steve, thinking that what I would like to see, and nobody asked me, but what I would like to see is for Jalen Hurts to have five quarters. I wanted to see him have a half in the first game, a half in the second game, and a quarter in the third game. Instead, he had 10 plays. He was, I think, 4 for 7 throwing the ball. He threw 7 passes, and that was it in terms of the games. And they talk about the drills, the combined drills, and they're like games. No, they're not. Only games are like games. And I'm not criticizing Nick Sirianni because I think he's a bright, energetic coach, and I think the world of him. But it's just different. So maybe I'm going to have to completely revise my thinking if this team comes out of the gate and they play sharp, hard-hitting football. But right now, I have to tell you, this has been a training camp unlike any other. It's been light. The practices have all been 1.5 hours, and that's it. I mean, I remember when Dick Vermeil had them practicing 3 hours a day, twice a day, with pads. Now, things aren't the same. I know that. Dick Vermeil brought 120 guys to camp, and sometimes it looked like the Bataan Death March. But this is a different NFL. I don't know if things are the same up at State College or the college practices the same, but the NFL has changed dramatically.
Well, there's less hitting, obviously, in practice now. In college, the NCAA has mandated that less hitting. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, Don Shula, who has more wins than anybody, when he left the Colts and took the Miami Dolphins job, the Dolphins had four-a-days.
Oh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's how much it's changed. I mean, that's the change in mentality. And that's why I always tell people, I don't know if you feel the same way, Merrill, but I said, I usually start to see some really good, solid tackling, usually at the beginning of the third game of a college season, that the first couple of games you're trying. Now, Penn State tackled well Saturday, all right? So I give them a lot of credit for that. They did tackle well. But usually it's not until like the third game where I start to see, because I think that's where the tackling takes place.
Well, I've always felt, not always, but I've felt in recent years that September is to the NFL what the preseason used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Totally different.
Can you get a gauge? I mean, they're practicing and practicing and practicing it. Can you get a gauge about the kind of handle the players have on Nick Sirianni's offense?
No. You know why? Because I haven't seen Nick Sirianni's offense, and I haven't seen Jonathan Gannon's defense. I have seen is vanilla, vanilla, vanilla. Base offense, base defense. I haven't seen one trick play. I haven't seen one gadget play. I haven't seen one blitz. And now I've seen blitzes in practice drills, obviously, but there was no blitzing in the three preseason games. There wasn't one jet sweep. There wasn't, you know, there was nothing. It was totally different. It was just as basic and bland as you could possibly be. So I'm not prepared to tell you whether Nick Sirianni is going to be a run first coach or a set up the run with the pass, or if Jonathan Gannon's going to be bring the kitchen sink or play it more conservatively the way Jim Schwartz did. I don't know. I don't know.
And that's a fair answer. In terms of, obviously Rager came in last year, but Devontae Smith ended up being the first round pick this year. How excited are you to see that kind of skill set in the Eagles offense?
Oh, you know what? I used to watch him at Alabama, and I used to daydream and say, oh, if only the Eagles could draft Devontae Smith, he could turn this franchise around. And then I'd say to myself, nah, forget about it. They'll probably take some fireman who plays center, you know. Which they did one year, by the way, a guy named Danny Watkins. But the truth of the matter is, you think about things like that, but you don't really think he's going to end up on the team that you broadcast. And he did, and he is amazing. He is. I cannot wait to see what he looks like when he actually has a full game to play in Atlanta. I think he's going to be an instant star.
And then, of course, there's the Miles Sanders factor as well. And I guess what Miles was a little up and down catching the ball in the preseason. But you feel like the Eagles have a chance to get balance on offense just based on personnel.
I do. About Miles, I mean, he got criticized for his catching ability last year. That was mostly because Carson Wentz was hitting him in the either over his shoulder pads or in his ankles. I mean, Miles Sanders is a good receiver, and he showed that in his first year. Miles Sanders is a great kid, and he is a wonderful running back. The only negative would be that he hasn't been totally durable so far. He has gotten nicked and missed time. But Miles Sanders is a tremendous running back and a real character young man. I think he's great.
It goes to a 17-game season this year. I don't know how much of an opportunity you've had to talk to the players. When you have, has that been brought up about the extra game they have to play in the regular season?
Steve, how about this? I have not met anybody who's drafted after 2019. I never met anybody from last year's team, and I've never met anybody from this year's team, other than the group press conference that they have right after a tent when they send the guys up. I haven't met Jalen Hurts ever.
Wow.
Because the COVID restrictions are so great. There's no open locker room. You are not allowed to walk over to a player when he's walking off the field. It's complete. There's, of course, you're never going to have locker rooms after a game or anything like that. I don't know one guy. I mean, personally. So it's tough to get a handle. I mean, I watch them at practice, and they seem enthusiastic. I mean, there was never a day at practice where I thought they were dragging. They were always moving quickly, and they looked enthusiastic. And Nick was the kind of coach. He reminded me, from a demeanor standpoint, of a 39-year-old Dick Vermeil who came here.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of approach, where he's all over the field talking to this guy, talking to that guy. You just feel the sparks coming out. But I honestly have not met a player in 2 years. And I know you travel with the Nittany Lions. Mike Quick and I will not be traveling, at least going into the year, unless something changes later in the year. I don't know. But we're back to doing the road games virtually, except for the Giants and Jets games at the Meadowlands where we can drive.
Wow. Boy. How have you found that, calling a game off a monitor? How have you found that to be?
It's different. Last year we had something called the All-22, which I'm not sure we're getting this year because of I don't know what kind of regulations. So we had six different screens. We had the screen for the game being the actual telecast in real time. We had that screen also in the delay that the viewers were getting. We also had the All-22, which was a panoramic view of the field. We also had a screen for statistics, a screen for drop-ins. I mean, my head was bobbing and weaving all over the room. But it didn't matter. And we also had crowd noise piped in. So I think a lot of people told me that they couldn't tell the difference. They didn't know if I was there or I wasn't there. I mean, they said it sounded like a normal Eagles broadcast. So I take that as a compliment, and I hope we can do it again. But once you get the knack of it, it's okay. Now, in some cases, it's better. I mean, for example, when we go to Washington to FedEx Field, we have the worst view anybody could ever have. We're sitting in the lower corner of the end zone. There's an overhang. I really can't see the scoreboard. And when they pass the 50 going from my left to my right, I'm not sure if they pick up 6 yards or 16. So when we go to Dallas to the stadium, my son calls a monument to excess. When we go to Jerry's World, most of the time when they go down towards the 20, I'm watching the game on that big screen anyhow. Yeah. So it's you get used to it. You do what you have to do, but it's still football, and I still love every single second of it.
And yes, it does. Yeah, I could not tell last year at all whether you were at the link or on location. So yeah, I felt the same way as other people. And as for Merrill's ability to describe the broadcast booth, as somebody who's done a game at FedEx. And as somebody who's done a Cotton Bowl at Jerry World, he is spot on.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Oh. I mean, I just sit there and go, you got to be kidding me. I mean, especially FedEx. At least in Arlington, you're up. In FedEx, you're low. What the heck's the thought process there?
I mean, really low. I mean, I remember the old RFK Stadium when I started doing the Eagles, the Washington team. Incidentally, what kind of team in 2 years can't even figure out a nickname? Isn't that unbelievable? They don't even know who they are. But anyhow, that old RFK Stadium, we used to look down at ants. I mean, but I could see the ants. and I could figure them out. I mean, I could remember them. I could see those guys, and I could see formations. And I'd use the binoculars a lot, of course. And also at the original Texas Stadium, we were great at that middle level, but then, of course, they moved that into suites. And then when they put us up on the roof again, and we were practically doing it out of a helicopter, but still, we could see the whole field. And watch, oh, there's a worse one. Oh, my gosh. I never thought there was a worse one. And I experienced a worse one 2 years ago, and that was Miami. The places had 14 names, and I did it in the booth next to Jimmy Cephalo, who said, and he does the play-by-play for the Dolphins, and he said he hasn't seen a game, actually, since he's been doing them there. You have to almost work exclusively out of the monitor, off of the monitor, because you're in a corner of that end zone and half of the field is blocked from you. So it's a real challenge, I'll tell you that.
Yep, did an Orange Bowl in that stadium. No, from what you speak.
Isn't that the worst? The worst. Yeah. Now, conversely, I love the link is wonderful. MetLife.
Yes,
the Giants Stadium is wonderful with the scoreboards on the level of the field. You don't even have to look up. It's an amazingly great stadium, and there are wonderful stadiums. But then Pittsburgh, you're in the end zone. Arizona, you're in the end zone, and plus it could be a 70-degree day, and they put the roof up, and it becomes a gray dank gymnasium in the middle of Glendale, Arizona. So that's no bargain. But I haven't been to Las Vegas yet, and I thought I would be this year. but apparently I'll be watching Las Vegas from another screen. So we'll see.
Oh, unless, my goodness.
It's still the greatest job in the world, except for yours. So I wouldn't trade it for anything, believe me.
Yeah, did a Fiesta Bowl. It was a 75-degree day, not a cloud in the sky, roof was closed. I'm looking at Jack and I are looking at you like, what the heck? Open the roof.
they've turned it into arena football. I don't understand it. You know, I can understand if you have the capability of opening and shutting a roof, that if it's a blizzard that you can shut it, or if it's 110 degrees and it's tough for the players to breathe. But they shut it just to make their crowds louder. And see, I believe that stuff should be regulated by the NFL. I don't think that should be a home team call. I think the NFL should give them guidelines, and they should have to adhere to them. And by the way, if I can throw something else in that I'm starting to think about, I was watching the game last night, the Louisville Ole Miss mess, but I was watching like three or four guys ejected for targeting. And one of your kids got ejected for targeting the other day when they hit the quarterback along the sideline. You know, I can understand, and believe me, I am one who believes in safety, and I hate dirty play. But I think there should be some kind of discretion taken when that happens, because there are times when the helmet's hit, but it's really not targeting. It's incidental contact, helmet to helmet. And I believe there should be a personal foul and unnecessary roughness. And I believe there should be a 15-yard penalty. But I don't think every one of those things is player ejection worthy.
No, because there are times, as you know, and you see it all the time in the NFL, where the receiver catches, gets into that fetal position and lowers down, or the running back or the quarterback lowers down, and it's the person with the ball that lowers themselves into your helmet.
Sure, it happens. And in the NFL, there is no ejection for that. But in college football, they have that targeting, and the kid who did whatever he had to do to stop the play gets sent to the sideline, and he's out of the game, and sometimes has to miss the first half of the next game. And I just think they ought to look at that again. And I love college football. I'll watch every Penn State game, and I'll listen to you whenever I possibly can. I love your broadcast.
Well, I love your broadcast. Think the absolute world of you. I cannot wait to hear you on Sunday. Merrill, thank you so much for your time, and everyone appreciates the greatness that you bring to the broadcast, the passion, the love, and the description. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. Always look forward to speaking with you again, and hopefully we can catch up again around midseason and see where we're going.
Absolutely, Merrill. Appreciate you very much, my friend.
Take care.
Merrill Reese.